business. Well, if you're going into the same pool of resources, the same pool of candidates, the same pool of potential business partners, you're going to get much more of the same. Do you find, you've obviously worked with these organizations, at least in terms of the Supplier Diversity Alliance of Canada. Do you find that there is, perhaps a bit of a hotbed of innovation with these groups? Is it fostering that out of the box thinking that businesses might want to take a really good look at?
You're absolutely right. And that's part of the reason why corporations and governments are really focused around the importance of including diverse businesses. So there's kind of that social element that I talked about in terms of like helping to economically empower these marginalized community groups. But there's a business case behind this. Corporations realize that if they want to drive innovation, if they want to bring in new ideas, new solutions to problems, they have to look outside of their traditional supplier base. If they keep going to that same company that's run by that Jeff that you talked about, are they going to get the right solutions, the right answers to the problems that they're facing now? Or are they going to be able to create new products that are perhaps are where they have a much broader consumer base that aren't all perhaps white, straight individuals? And so that's the advantage for corporations and governments to start looking at this. It's how can we drive innovation? How can we drive new ideas, new solutions? And at the same time, how can we help to reduce costs? We know that quite often diverse businesses tend to be a little bit smaller, but that also means that they can be a little bit more agile and nimble. So that can help to drive cost savings and reduce costs. But we also know that given what we've seen over the last, especially during the pandemic with supply chain issues, having suppliers, having a larger base of suppliers that can be more nimble or perhaps local can help to overcome some of those supply chain issues that we've faced over the last few years. So there's a lot of different reasons that corporations are starting to and actively engage with diverse-owned businesses.
You mentioned something coming up in June of 2024. Is that something that businesses who are, maybe interested in kicking the can at diversifying the supply chains, is that something that they might be able to look into?
Yeah, absolutely. This is really an opportunity for any business to come and learn around what are the advantages of diversifying your supply chain? How do you go about doing that? And just learn best practices from other organizations that are doing it well, not only here in Canada, but from around the world. This is not a Canadian concept. It's not a Canadian program. This is something that really originated in the U.S. over 60 years ago and has spread across the globe. And so, for Canada, we've been doing it around 20 years, so still relatively new. But yeah, absolutely. If there are businesses, individuals that are interested in continuing to advance opportunities for diverse-owned businesses, the conference in June is definitely an opportunity where they can definitely benefit.
So you helped to co-found CGLCC. From when you started to, not just this point now, but 2024, not to quote Dan Savage here, but has it got better? Have things improved? Is the ecosystem maturing, as it were?
Short answer is yes, things have definitely improved. But I think the more that the more things improve, the more we want more, right? And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I think we need to continue to drive and we need to continue to push for greater access, greater opportunities, greater equality. So yes, things have definitely improved, but yes, we still have a lot to do. We are one of the things that we work very closely with those other councils that I mentioned earlier is on the advocacy side and really working with the federal government to, as they're building out their social procurement policy, really looking at the advantages again of supplier diversity. And so there's a lot of work that still needs to be done on that side. And I think on the corporate side as well, again, continuing to educate corporations on what we're doing here and the impact that having diverse businesses within their supply chain can have on them. So there's still, we've, as I said, we've come a long ways, but we still have a lot of work to do.
You mentioned the federal government there, and I want to pick up on another example that I'm going to use to sort of pivot the conversation here. The federal government funded Fierté Canada Pride, and for anyone who's had any kind of connection or just read the news about the local pride organizations, it's a roller coaster. And in almost any city, it is a it'll chew you out and spit, chew you up and spit you out. Organization. There's very little institutional knowledge, very little national standards. And but by funding Fierté Canada Pride, the government was able to help to create a an infrastructure, a shared knowledge base, a sort of a backbone for pride organizations across the whole country. And I think that approach, I believe that that approach is going to be very effective. And we were speaking a bit earlier before the before we jumped onto the interview about your program that's rolling out for organizations, not individuals. So if you're a LGBTQ entrepreneur, this is going to be interesting, but not necessarily crack open your resume moment. But it's around funding organizations to improve the ecosystem that supports LGBTQ entrepreneurs, creating that backbone. Why did you decide to take this approach and not just directly funding LGBTQ entrepreneurs directly?
I think there's a couple of reasons, and you were bang on in your example with Pride. We know that if we want to be able to build a sustainable support network for LGBT entrepreneurs, we need to be able to have strong organizations that are sustainable. And that means making sure that they have the proper infrastructure, that they have the proper resources, that they have the tools that they need to be able to continue to operate, as opposed to just doing a one-off grant to them. So, or funding them for a specific activity. What the goal here, so first of all, I'll give you a little bit of a some backstory here. So part of what the federal government rolled out earlier this year was a $25 million 2SLGBTQI plus entrepreneurship program. So this $25 million fund was really split into kind of what we're calling three different pillars. So we have one pillar that's very focused around knowledge and research. So we have a second pillar which is focused around what we're calling the scale up. So it's really creating tools and programs to support directly support the entrepreneurs. So it's not funding the entrepreneurs, but it's giving them tools. It's giving them things like mentorship, access to international markets, things like that. And then the third piece is that ecosystem. It's strengthening that ecosystem. So rather than because $25 million in the reality is doesn't go very far over the course of 3 years as a national trying to do something nationally, the decision was made to rather than funding entrepreneurs directly, let's fund those ecosystem, let's fund those organizations that can then better support the entrepreneurs on an ongoing basis. And so if we can help to ensure that they are set up for success, that there's some longevity there, that there's sustainability there, that is going to create so much more impact and greater impact than I think a one-off grant to an entrepreneur could provide. And then secondly, in doing this, what we're able to do is really strengthen those support systems nationally. So whether you're out in Victoria or whether you're up in Nunavut or in Halifax, the goal here is to be able to build support networks for entrepreneurs wherever they are. And so that's really the goal here is how can we provide kind of a ongoing resource network for these entrepreneurs that they can continue to tap into for as long as we can, right?
I mean, I think that that's, you know, we were talking earlier, and what really jumped out at me is that idea of creating a, you know, it goes back to that level playing field, you know, for folks who happen to be in Moose Jaw or they happen to be in Yellowknife, you know what I mean? It's the amount of resources available in Toronto or Vancouver or Montreal certainly dwarf those of the smaller towns and communities across the country. So I think that this is a really interesting initiative, and we're syndicated all over the place. And if you're in one of those communities, go and check this out, because I think that this is certainly something that can be used to support LGBTQ or 2S LGBTQ T plus entrepreneurs across the country, really. I mean, it really is quite something. Now, you folks have been working directly with businesses for a while, working with entrepreneurs for a while. You have your gala, which is a really key signature event. I think that happened relatively recently. You know, is there's certainly, we talk a lot, we try to avoid particularly pessimistic, you know, news, but is your sense of queer business, you know, in the whole broad sense of it, are you looking at a glass half full? Are you, you know, in terms of where things go next? Government is likely to change. The future of these big projects are you know, obviously up for some discussion. But, you know, how optimistic are you?
Yeah, you know, so we've been at this for a while. This is our 20th anniversary. So, you know, we've been fighting the fight for 2S LGBTQI plus businesses for a while now. And listen, I'm still optimistic. As mentioned, I'm not delusional. There's still a lot of work to be done. And we've seen, especially over the last year, the rise in anti-LGBT and anti-trans hatred. You know, I think that's the sort of thing that continues to fuel me, that makes me realize that, you know, our work is not done. And I think the brilliant thing about what we do is that, you know, we approach things from a business lens, and we work with governments, we work with organizations to get them to understand that through business, we can drive social change. And so we can make this country more 2S LGBTQ inclusive through the power of business. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, we've been working with the Liberal government for a while now, and we've got this great program. But we also know that we can work with the Conservatives, we can work with the NDPs, because they all speak that common language of business and economics. And that is, for us, how we kind of navigate the system to try to create that better world, I guess, and drive that social change. And then we worked hand in hand with other social organizations and civil society organizations to, you know, as they're kind of approaching it from different lenses and different sides. And so I think when we all come together, that's what excites me, and see how we can create this synergy of all kind of coming in at different sides and different angles to create the same ultimate outcome, which is, again, that a better place for all citizens, but specifically to 2S LGBTQI+.
Well, I think we've only touched on a couple of the things that you do. I believe we've interviewed folks there about tourism initiatives and so much more. It really is the tip of the iceberg. You know, when we think about business, you know, there is a lot of different aspects to that. I want to thank you so much. I strongly encourage folks to go to CGLCC, that's C as in Charlie, G as in golf, .ca, CGLCC.ca, and go on. I believe it's easy enough to navigate, find the announcements about both the supply diversity initiative as well as the organizational funding for LGBTQ entrepreneurialism. So thank you so much, Daryl. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Luke, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Good speaking with you.
toasted to get you out.
Come do your thing, move.
See, but I'll be rolling in. Blind for the shade of the night. Guess I'll be repping it. Don't stop at no red lights. Tell me where you wanna go. Baby, don't take your time. GPS, come back, rewind. Oh, yeah, you know what you do. Keep on riding till we're through. Cruise control. With this hot down, I can't help it. Grip it tight like you first felt it.
Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I believe we unlocked you from the toilet. I told everybody that during the interview with the co-founder and CEO of CGLCC, Dara Sherman, that we had locked you in the toilet. So I'm glad that we've let you out. Moved on. We had a track just play. It was the second in the selection from yourself. What was the name of that track?
The second track was I Am Rebel Will with Cruise Control. I found I Am Rebel Will. I was just looking up, you know, the latest coming out in Canadian music, and I found a little sub list for queer musicians, and then I just sort of poked through things, and I Am Rebel Will really jumped out at me as that sort of like trip hop R&B blend that I absolutely love. And I really wish society in general would play more of. I love that vibe. That's the kind of music I listen to when I work, actually. So this is a find. And this is going to be one of those musicians that I don't just showcase. I actually probably will listen to him a little bit more in my own time, too.
Excellent. So one of the last stories I have for today is around the UK, the United Kingdom of Great Britain. And it's been a busy week over there for news this past week.
That's pretty intensely.
Yes. Now, we had discussed the ground-shaking, monumental decision mm-hmm. of the British government mm-hmm. to use a very, like, well, it was an untested, it had never before been used, law mm-hmm. that allowed them to veto a law of a devolved government. So in Britain, unlike Canada, so in Canada we're a federation, there's a clear mm-hmm. division of authority. The lighthouses are federal. And despite what people will make you think, healthcare is provincial. Mm-hmm. But that being said, in the UK, it works the other way around. All authority rests with Parliament and the monarchy, and then it is devolved via Acts of Parliament to the Holyrood in Scotland and the Welsh Assembly in Wales, the Northern mm-hmm. Ireland as well. I don't think that there's some devolution to counties and cities, but nowhere near as much.
Yeah.
Now, that has meant that Scotland, on these areas, can make their own laws. And they have done so for many, many, many years, decades now that this law has been in place. And never once has the British government challenged or vetoed any law out of Scotland or Wales mm-hmm. Or Northern Ireland. And they did this time, with the argument being that Scotland's self-identification, gender recognition, which essentially meant that instead of having multiple doctors and a long process required for self-identifying as trans, that they simplified the process. They followed a model out of, I think, Spain and Norway had a similar model. I think it's more Norway. It might be one of the other Scandinavian countries. But mm-hmm. I think there's a half dozen countries in Europe that have self-identification. Now, Britain's argument was that this new law in Scotland would have an automatic impact on British law, that by changing the law in Scotland, because of the permeability of the border, you know, right. you don't get your passports checked at the Scottish border, it's going to have an automatic impact on the law in the rest of the UK. And that's the reason that they gave for vetoing the law. Now, the big decision this week is that the Supreme Court of Scotland, Superior Court of Scotland, I think it is, has sided with the British government on this, specifically on that question. Mm-hmm. And it really boiled down to, would this law impact the law in the rest of Britain? And they have found that on that fact, it did, and therefore the use of the veto mm-hmm. is valid.
Valid.
Now, should it have been done? There was no decision on the merits of the move by the British government on its, you know, there was no decision on why the British government is defeating this law. Mm-hmm. But really, the court zeroed in. And they do this. And we love when they do this. They were mm-hmm. like, you ask us four questions, but we're going to answer one half question about procedure and call it a day.
And
that's exactly what they've done here. They've really... very narrow. They've avoided the whole trans debate, identification. They ignored all of that. Mm-hmm. They were like, we see your social issue. We're going to move it over here to the side, out of the way, and focus exclusively on that technical question
of
does law A impact law B, yes or no? And they found that it did. So
that is a major issue. Every time you introduce any law, it could even just be about parking, you need to be careful that you're not going to accidentally create inconsistencies where if you follow this law, you're breaking that law and vice versa. Because that can happen. That has happened, especially when you got levels involved. Like you have provincial levels and federal level laws that go against each other. And then some court or somebody comes in and basically says, hey, wait a minute. Look at, we discovered we gotta review this. And usually what happens is they scrap between the two laws that contradict each other, whichever one is newer. They just put that on pause until they figure out how to fix it. But I mean, the procedure changes every time. I guess it depends on what level they've discovered the inconsistency at. But you got to make sure that when you introduce a new law, you don't create accidental problems. So from that perspective, I mean, it could be one of those issues of like, we're not against this law. We're against how you did it, or we're against how you phrased it. I don't know how many laws here in Canada have been shot down and everyone's like, well, the government in power is racist or homophobic or sexist or whatever. And then the leader of the party comes out and says, no, that law was just badly phrased. Look at all the inconsistencies it makes. That can happen. We're like, we're 100% for the spirit of the law. Just the way that it was created is bad and dumb and stupid. And we can do better.
Very much a cultural shift happening in the UK, around a lot of unease and definitely unease coming up in the ranks. We'll see what happens and how those stories develop. But I believe we have run out of time. We're going to be playing out with our last song, which I'll actually have you introduce this time. I've been Luke Smith.
We'll be listening to Toxic by Mala Leona, another sort of like trip hop, hip hop kind of feel, R&B feel that I found while looking for new music. And I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service. Please check the number and try your call again.
Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Every day, PFLAG Canada volunteers are contacted by frightened kids and by angry, fearful, or ashamed parents. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.
We are live.